Hello, welcome back to the Self-Healer Soundboard, and thank you for tuning in with us. We've been diving into some deeper workbook episodes where we've been pulling the content and practices from our new workbook, How to Meet Yourself, off the pages and out to the world on this podcast or this video cast that you can watch on YouTube. And most recently, episode 90, we began ego work. That episode is titled How to Do Ego Work. Episode 92 is then all about shadow work. And I reference these last two because ego and shadow both play a part in our episode today, where those two episodes were pulled directly from the workbook. So I suggest going back to them, episode 90 and episode 92. You could even pull out a notebook and pen or a notepad on your phone to take notes or reflections or even save those questions for you to do an inquiry later. And today's episode, we are continuing that conversation more in a personal aspect. While many learn directly from the prompts and tools and practices that we give, many of you also learn through hearing our sharing and personal stories, either resonating or identifying that you do not resonate, which is also such valuable feedback for you. So we're going to open up a conversation today about our own ego stories.
So without going into too much detail about ego and shadow, and like Jenna suggested, checking out those episodes can be very, very helpful. But so we're all starting at the same point here. Really simply, our ego can be thought of as the story of you, based on an accumulation of all of your childhood experiences, really all of your life experiences. Ego really becomes the narrative, all of the different ways many of us have learned to think about ourselves. So we can think about the ego as the story of me in many ways. And then we can think about the shadow as all of the denied or repressed, all of those aspects of ourself, our experiences, even aspects of who we are that have been kept out of our own awareness, again, based on those earliest childhood environments. So while our ego is the story of me, in many ways, our shadow is the denied or the repressed story of me, equally reflective of those early experiences. And the practices that we overviewed that came from the workbook around identifying or witnessing and meeting our ego and similarly meeting our shadow will really help us pull from those unconscious places or that subconscious habits that we often talk about and give ourselves the opportunity to see for ourselves these mental constructs, because that's really what they are. Though, of course, for many of us, well into adulthood, they're beyond mental constructs. They're directing how we feel and oftentimes our habitual reaction. So creating the space, as you and I often say, Jenna, to be in observation of both our ego and our shadow will allow us to then integrate it, or how to learn to live with it. Take the information, because both of those, our ego and our shadow, are markers of something, usually deeper unmet needs, unresolved or suppressed emotions, so that we can then begin to make more aligned choices. And of course, we're going to go into this episode, our own journeys of doing just that, beginning to live in observation of our own ego and our own shadow.
The more we learn and become aware of these different concepts or ideas like ego and shadow work, the more knowledge we can have. And at the same time, when we are beginning our healing journeys, many of us, this was myself included, will hear and learn these different concepts and get so hung up in the definition of them or understanding them thoroughly or perfectly and how they react and respond to the other, that when we're not paying attention, we end up swept up in this same cyclical cycle that actually for me comes from an ego story as well of I don't understand, I'm not doing it right, I'm not smart enough, or the constant question that I've witnessed my mind asking and outwardly I've watched myself ask so many times in my life, even so often to, I notice myself doing it to you too, Nicole. I'm like, am I doing it right? Is that really a word? Am I saying it right? All of these are examples of our ego stories of our ego thoughts or questions in our mind. So if you are one of those people who has been asking, and I say this because just this morning in our Self Healer Circle membership portal, a member was asking this very question. They were working on ego work in one of our courses. It was ego consciousness. And they were asking about the difference between ego and shadow work, and if they are different, and then how they're different, how they then integrate. And the first step before all of that, really the most important foundational step, is simply just witnessing that there are these thoughts or voices and concepts and ideas that are there. And then there's the separation and space between all of them and your habits and patterns and conditioning and your true authentic self. That is the same true authentic self that you arrived with the day that you were born here in this world.
I really appreciate you using that example just to jump us even off with of how, you know, the ego plays out, even sometimes, whether it's the example you're giving and, you know, kind of self-monitoring or concerns, if you're saying things correctly or, you know, understandable or whatever it might be. And I'll go and make an even more general statement. A lot of times, even the tendency to hyperfixate on doing it right and wrong, to even to the extent that we don't start the ego or the shadow work, whatever it might be. And of course, this isn't the case with the member that we're describing, though oftentimes it can become the case, because one of the primary spaces of residence, if you will, for our ego, I called it a mental construct earlier, because one of the primary places of residence is actually in our thoughts. Though in reality, it is so much more like that iceberg analogy that I love that you use, Jenna. It's so much more beyond our thoughts, because our ego and those thought-based filters, worrying about how we are sounding, are we sounding intelligent, are we sounding smart, whatever it might be, oftentimes they go hand in hand with sensations, emotions, feelings in our body. And then right on the heels of that, more often than not, comes the habitual way we react to those. Though, of course, before we begin the journey that is ego work and shadow work, all of this happens outside of our awareness. And many of us just catch ourselves somewhere downstream when we're already living in that reactivity or post-reaction, many of us feeling very shameful. So bringing this up to our conscious awareness, all of the different dominoes of steps, even the fact that you're able to sit here on this podcast, Jen, and say, all of these thoughts were going through my mind, and beginning, listeners, to pay attention when you're narrating yourself. What is it that you're saying or thinking about yourself or worrying about yourself? Begin to pay attention first and foremost to those thoughts, because more often than not, you will see patterns similar to the ones that you're sharing.
It's really important as you begin paying attention to those thoughts to also not believe all of those thoughts. It is it's a treasure trove of gold to witness the thoughts that are already happening without fixing or changing them. And sure, if you have a desire to fix and change your thoughts, I do too. I have a constant desire to reframe my thoughts in a way that involves possibility and expansion and empowerment. And I also have learned with time not to believe every thought I have, though to have a space of gratitude for it, for the sheer fact that it exists. So if it's information that's already existing in my mind, for me to become aware of that and then toss it to the curb or the wayside is me doing a disservice to myself. I almost look at it as an irresponsibility to myself and little Jenna, because the thoughts are there. And no matter what they are, if I can choose to practice loving compassion and acceptance with myself, this is reparenting. This is an ongoing practice that is integrated into all of our work. It's holding space lovingly for all of the thoughts that I do have, and starting to notice over and over, even to this day, if I'm low on resources, if there's something happening that is, you know, weighing on my heart or doesn't feel complete within me, then my thoughts might start to go to that. Am I doing it right? Jenna, why did you do that? Why didn't you do X? You could have said or done this so much better. All of those thoughts are even so helpful to this day for me to see. It's not like eventually you practice this enough that you're just one and done. I can then notice, these thoughts are really ramping up today. Instead of being my own best friend today, I'm kind of acting out as my own best enemy. And then I can start to make the connections in this sea of embodied curiosity where I'm literally in my body sort of looking around and thinking, what could be impacting this? What's there in my space? What am I dealing with? How are my resources? Am I fed? Am I hydrated? Are there needs that are not met? Could those unmet needs be connected to this ego? It's a whole world of observation, simply in allowing yourself to witness with compassion what is already there.
I love that you're bringing up kind of the question in so many ways of believability, because of the really complicated nature of the ego and why we're even dedicating space in the workbook and now these podcast episodes and even within our membership is because the lived experience of our ego is actually that we do believe those thoughts to be true because they have been so grounded in those very real lived experiences. Again, not often objective at all, filtered through the experiences of our caregivers, their, you know, ability to meet their own needs and be attuned to us and create that space of curiosity. So while we've come to believe them to be true, it doesn't mean that they are in objective truth. So just to preface all of this with that distinction, but that's essentially what makes the ego so difficult to work with because they are baked into us, as I like to say, in belief because all of our experiences have confirmed that, including our own actions. Because as I started to pay more and more attention to my internal world, to the meaning that all of our minds are trying to make out of our daily experiences, I continue to see one theme through all of my thoughts. And for me, that theme was some version of how I am not considered. That's the language that I hear in my mind's eye. That's how I interpret, you know, people showing up for me, not showing up for me, whatever it is, all roads lead back to, I'm not worthy of that consideration. And where that narrative, again, not based in objective reality, we're all worthy of having our needs met, even if our past circumstances did not allow it to be the case, as was the case in my own past. Having a family with little emotional attunement or resilience left me feeling not connected, not seen, not valued, and not secure in my relationships. So on a deep level, the lack of having my emotional needs met so consistently over time in childhood left me with nothing else to believe from that very, again, I want to remind everyone, that very immature developmental point that we're all in childhood. We can't zoom out and have all of the maturity and nuance for all of the reasons why my mom and dad in particular weren't able to emotionally attune to me. In childhood, we are the cause of every happening in our life. So in those moments where my parents weren't emotionally present for me, the way my child mind made sense of those moments, well, why weren't they present? Because I wasn't worthy of having my needs met. I wasn't worthy of having my needs considered. And that then became, because we desire the familiar, anytime something similar happened in any of my relationships or experiences throughout my adulthood, now I liked to rest in that security. Well, of course, it's because it could be no other reason, right? I'm in that power of belief now because I'm not worthy of that consideration based again in a repetition of those childhood patterns.
And when those childhood patterns are instilled, we then become the seeker of them because that has been our reality. It's like this Groundhog's Day or the idea that it's the same over and over and over and over. And that's what leads so many people to a healing journey or a choice because it is a choice. Becoming aware, choosing to become aware means choosing yourself. And for a lot of people, it means choosing yourself for the very first time and choosing to unlearn all of the practiced ways that we have now become the embodiment of seeking our past. Even though if someone were to say that we're recreating it or seeking that, we're immediately in an opposition. No, I'm not. I don't want to recreate my past. I'm not seeking all of this in my life. Though that's the submerged iceberg. We might be able to articulate, some of us, that we want something different, though so ingrained in our actual body, in ourselves, and then how we express and respond to the world in our actions, in that energy that reverberates out and the choices that we make is actually in alignment with this cyclical cycle of the past, seeking that comfort of the familiarity, even if that familiarity meant chaos and abuse or neglect or this wounding, like Nicole's sharing of, I'm not considered. Imagine being a child and really inherently believing with all of your might that you are not considered. That's heartbreaking for a child. It's extremely alienating. But the child doesn't go into, this is really heartbreaking. I'm not considered by the people around me. I'll go seek something else. No, that child then has believed in that moment that they inherently really aren't considered. And I think this aspect that you just shared about the reality as a child, when something happens to us or around us, we believe we are the ones responsible. You know, it's not daddy was fighting with mommy or drunk because he had a rough day or was dealing with his generational trauma. No, it's daddy is drunk and fighting with mom because I did something. I caused that. Dad decided to get in the car and leave and never return, not because dad was dealing with his own struggles and wounding, but because I caused him to leave. We believe as children that there is a direct extension from our being, quite literally from our heart, extended out to whatever adult or parent figure who is supposed to be our safe person. And in any moment of unsafety, we believe and see that we are the direct doer of that. We created that. And I've seen this play out so viscerally throughout the last 30 years of my life, really, where so deeply ingrained, even when I was years into a healing journey and thought I had forgiven my dad, like, you know, 6 years ago, I thought I had forgiven him and dealt with all of this stuff, come to find out there was so much more buried under the surface. And I never honored just how packed down this wounding of being abandoned was. And given that it was Father's Day 2 days ago, and we just released a long hour and a half episode of conversation just about fatherhood, dads in general, it's episode 91, if you haven't checked that one out. So in honoring that it was Father's Day in that episode, I found two old letters that I had written to my own father. One when I was 8 years old, that is a 2-page poem to him asking why he left. And the next is a letter that I wrote him at age 23 that I never ended up sending him. And at 23, I then hadn't seen him in like 6 years. I had seen him once when I was a teenager. And I mention these letters because I noticed that in both letters, one when I was 8 and one 15 years later when I was 23, I'm consistently asking the same question, why did you leave me? And in the latter one at 23, I say, you know, I don't actually need an answer, but I do need you to know that I'm thinking it. So even in that, there's still a seeking and still a direct correlation and really deeply embedded belief that there was something in me that did cause this man to leave. So then I would perpetuate that cycle and find all of my safety and familiarity in relationship with others who were either unavailable or whom I knew it was going to be short-lived, and either they or myself were leaving because it allowed the safety of that abandonment.
Very similarly, I think a lot of us can see these aspects of our ego and all of these, you know, adaptations or coping patterns within our relationships. And similarly, I saw the same pattern of me consistently not feeling considered in any of my relationships, and then getting to the point where my resentment of the other person who I was certain was the one not considering me, once that would boil over, the relationship would end and I would go on and merrily along trying to seek, right, the partner who would be able to fill that hole, not realizing that behind the scenes, my habits were very much reflective of that early childhood, of that deep feeling of not being worthy to meet my needs, and how that played out in my own relationships while I was holding all of my partners responsible, especially for my emotional needs, right? The sense of security and connection that I was desperately seeking. At the same time, in reality, I wasn't considering myself at all. I had no space in my relationship to honor my physical limits, my emotional limits. I mean, I couldn't even begin to tell people how I felt, what I wanted, what I thought, share my perspective, couldn't tell people why, because I didn't really know myself. I was very much that person who, when asked, you know, what I want to do for even, you know, how to spend a day, you know, an open day of plans, I would not be able to answer that. So all of that was really reflected again of this deep belief from my ego that I wasn't worthy of having my needs met. Yet on the surface, all I was in contact with up until I became aware of the beneath of the iceberg, if you will, was this deep desire, right? This unmet need where I wasn't feeling connected. Yet at the same time, I was holding everyone else responsible, but not doing a role in creating a connection, in making myself feel worthy. Because again, I was repeating the exact same way I felt and acting in the exact same way I learned to from childhood.
So when that ego story occurs in childhood, it gets locked in as fact. As children, we are egocentric. The world is us and we are the world. So when this belief of I'm not considered, or an insecurity that I'm always going to be abandoned or that I'm not worthy, then this very real thing called our ego kicks in. That gets cemented. This is why we say to befriend the ego, or the ego's not your enemy. Because imagine, as a small child, we'll take little Nicole and little Jenna, for example. Imagine little Nicole, who isn't being considered or feels not considered or even acknowledged in that moment, and little Jenna, who feels so unworthy and quite literally abandoned. Now, when I, as little Jenna, and Nicole as little Nicole, are the world and the world is us, and that happens, that's fact and gets locked in. That becomes our identity. That's not vicious. That ego identity occurred in that moment as a saving grace. It came in as a means of protection to say, you know what, little Nicole, even though you're not considered, and little Jenna, even though you're unworthy and abandoned, we got this. We're still going to make it through life. We're going to put on a little bit of armor. We're going to continue to strengthen the muscle of this ego story that I'm not considered and I'm not worthy. Because if I have all of the strength and the muscle in that story, then I get to control the narrative. This is what I mean by saying that we are then seeking that past. We are seeking and bringing into our reality, not that which we desire, but that which is of the past. We are strengthening that control, even though it's an ego story, because we believe that the ego story is actually our whole identity and being, which is where the need for awareness comes in. That's why it's the first step on any journey of healing or becoming conscious and intentionally creating your life, is that you become aware that there is a thing called ego. There's a thing called conditioning. There's a thing called these shadow parts of self. And whatever label you want to give them, whatever concept you want to name them, the idea is that there is a pure, whole, and complete magical being that came into this world in a human body the day that you were born. That being has gone through a series of conditioning like a sponge. We're creating separation so that you can acknowledge there's a being, and then there's all this stuff called conditioning and ego and pattern. That's where the awareness comes. Awareness is really just putting space between you and the armor that isn't you, but the armor that you've only ever seen in the mirror and identified as.
And thinking about armor, you know, from that place, not feeling worthy of having my needs met, not only, you know, did I feel too uncomfortable, too vulnerable to even allow myself to acknowledge my needs to myself, let alone, right, acknowledge them to someone else, a huge armor that I have worn and continue still in moments to wear myself, is the safest way that I was able to be connected to in childhood, which for me was through performance, through perfection, right? Through getting the straight A's that came, you know, quite easily and naturally to me in childhood, by being a star athlete. All of those moments were times where I was celebrated. I was seen. I was acknowledged. My parents were there cheering along on the sidelines, and I felt that connection. So in protection, then I learned how, whether it's in my personal relationships or my professional relationships, how to show up in what I imagine to be the most idealized form, or to perform, being the best partner, the best friend, the best sibling, the best daughter, whatever it might be, for whoever that person was that needed me. right? This focus on performance, on always presenting myself in that state of perfection, then led to an incredible difficulty that I still have around disappointment, around imperfections, around being seen not doing something perfectly. One of the most difficult things for me to this day, and when I learn something new, I like to do it in private, is learning new things. I mean, for those of you who have listened to me speak, especially early on when I started this much more public journey of speaking and teaching in front of cameras, I mean, learning how to do all of that was incredibly challenging. And if I'm going to be honest, was something that I wanted to quit, because that's usually how I've navigated discomfort of not being perfect right away. I didn't want to play the game I wasn't immediately good at. I didn't want to continue to work past the initial frustration that comes with learning something new. Why, again, all of this connected back to that ego, because in moments of perfection, I was loved. Why would I ever show someone else the rest of my humanity? Moments where I'm not perfect. The memory in my mind and body into my adulthood to this day remains that I will be rejected or abandoned. So we really do embody our ego in those moments, sometimes so much so below the surface that we feel shameful even considering sharing certain aspects of ourselves, not even realizing that that shame came from that conditioning you're talking about. We learn how to feel about even ourselves based in those earliest environments, oftentimes based in how those earliest people treated us in our earliest relationships.
I hope that for all of you who are watching or listening are maybe having some doors open in your own minds, either through your own exploring or just through hearing. Even as I'm just here present, listening to you speak, Nicole, I can, you know, I suddenly can access other thoughts or different ways of seeing things. And I appreciate all of you who are here tuning into this, who are willing to also just immerse in that. There's no answer or right or wrong conclusion to come to. We're really just being in an actual embodiment, intentionally choosing in this moment to explore maybe what we hadn't seen before. And even just as you're talking, I kept picturing a screen grab. This podcast, since its beginning over the last 2 years, has been like the ultimate ego story for me personally. And I was laughing. I was trying not to laugh as you were talking, because I pictured a clip of a screen grab of one of our most recent clips of the soundboard that we put up on social media. And I have such a serious, like scary face in this clip. And I used to really sort of beat myself up about that and then go into this perfectionist mode of how I look or whatever, how it translates. And I'm noticing that soften over time. Like, this is really the work in action and practice for me too, to be my own best friend. You know, this isn't a couple months or even a few years in the making. It's like a decade into intentionally saying, you know what? I want to actually love myself. I want to actually give outward the amount of love that I know I have inward. And I can only really do that outwardly if I can actually tap into that for myself and understand that there isn't a separation between myself and the outward. What I'm giving to me is also what I'm giving outwardly. And I see the representation of this, like, serious, I probably just did it just then, I wondered when I view back, that serious face comes from this ego story of mine. And I'm just exploring this connection now of, am I doing it right? Am I smart enough? Is what I'm saying valid? Am I just as good as X or whatever it is? Am I good enough? Am I smart enough? And I come from a family system where there was no one even really knowing what grade I was in, let alone checking report cards or being involved in school in any way. And I used to have such a sick to my stomach panic that I was like failing second, third, or fourth grade. I have no idea why, because I was there. But even in those moments, I just always felt like I was failing. And so I've overcompensated over time when it comes to business or when it comes to something that I think is really important. I get so serious and I can see this like serious face where as soon as the camera gets off and it's like I'm running around like a little goofball or a Care Bear and I'm like a little gummy worm. And I don't allow that side of me to really come out or translate into my work. It's something I'm intentionally working on. But that's another way you might notice how these ego stories could actually visibly show up for you, or how they audibly show up in how you speak or how you carry your body. If I'm here just having a conversation with Nicole or Lolly or, you know, anyone close, it's a different side. Or if I'm around kids, it's just much more playful and much more light. And it is an intentional practice and challenge for me to integrate that maternal softness into my business life and into my teaching and speaking. Now fully understanding that you can't really have one without the other. The more that I can honor and even say to you all about this serious face or the ego trip that, you know, my own outward public evolution and falter and success has been over the last couple of years, that's empowering for me because it allows me to open this analogy of the car that I've given on the few episodes. It allows me to open the door to allow my ego in, my shadow, all the parts that I'm like embarrassed of or ashamed of or just feel some kind of way about. I can see them. I can give language to them. That almost takes their power away. It starts to weaken their muscle and just allows their presence. And while that's occurring, while that muscle's weakening, the muscle of an actual heart-centered presence and joy, which is my true authentic self, that gets stronger and begins to feel safer to come forward and not take over the ego, but to be with it and also have its presence known.
Even hearing you, you know, use words like soften, right? Relax, be easeful, be joyful, be playful, really calls to mind how physiologically impossible really that was for me. And I imagine many of you listeners, and how this actually all connects to the ego story that I was sharing for myself, to be easeful, to rest in the present moment, to be joyful, to be, you know, playful or whatever it was, means to be present, or requires, I should say, a presence. I should start with in that present moment. And to be present, our needs, we have to be securely grounded in our body. Our needs have to be met. We have to be connected to our emotions. Our emotions are a large majority of how we even feel our experiences. So as the little girl who was unworthy of having those needs met, who was holding everyone else responsible, overstepping my own limits, not creating space for myself, right? Always worrying about how I need it or should. Shoulds were rampant through my mind's eye, all the things I should be doing, right, in service of someone else, left my own needs unmet, left my body completely dysregulated, and left those moments of joyful ease and playfulness completely impossible until, of course, I became aware and began to build back space in my entire life, my relationships included, for myself. And then those moments become possible. But I wanted to mention the shoulds because I think, again, anytime we're thinking about what we should be doing and overriding an instinct, whether my body is telling me, Nicole, I don't have the energy to do that anymore, or emotionally, I don't have the bandwidth to care for someone else. I need to care for myself. Those are great moments to begin to create a pause. If you think you should be doing something else, maybe dropping in to explore or get curious about what you might need instead. And that, for me, helped create a foundational practice of making space for myself, which was so incredibly important then, and even giving myself the opportunity to be present with another, connected with another, to have my needs met within a relationship. All of this really is interconnected back to that story, which was driving so much of my daily behaviors and my relationships.
We often think that self-care is selfish, or that not being egoic means completely sacrificing all of your needs and going to meet other people's needs. And even in a lot of teachings on ego, you hear that teaching, you know, go tend to another and notice how it will fill you up. And while I understand the sentiment in these teachings, there are so many layers of this hidden iceberg there that I don't think many people are grasping, that you can't actually meet someone else's need unless you have met your own first. So taking the time to actually check in and see if there are needs that are unmet, and to meet your own needs, which is going to literally be by hey, body, how are you doing right now? Hey, heart, how are you doing right now? Do you need anything? And literally asking yourself those questions. If I'm saying that and you're thinking, oh, that sounds weird, you're rolling your eyes, maybe you'll still pause and give it a whirl, but try it on. I invite you to just ask yourself, what need might be met? And if nothing comes, allow nothing to come. And then celebrate the fact that you even gave yourself 20 seconds to check in with yourself. You told yourself you're worthy. You started, even if it's the very first time, you started a new footpath in your mind to create a new neural pathway that if you show up for over and over and keep asking yourself those questions and carving out the time to choose yourself and make yourself a priority, then those answers will come. That relationship with self is established. Now you actually have a foundation to stand on where you can start to meet your needs now that you're aware of them, which allows you to actually genuinely begin meeting the needs of others instead of using the meeting of needs of others as a way to just secretly self-sacrifice and betray and dishonor your own self and needs.
It's a really helpful distinction there to make too. And I want to send another quick PSA to all of the eye rollers out there, sharing a little bit of my own observation of my ego shadow. It is in those moments, and speaking right directly to you, Jenna, and when Lolly as well, anytime either of you make a action toward meeting your needs directly, so you go take time or space that you need, and or Lolly very directly, you know, asks for her foot rub or physical contact, something that's very connecting and regulating for her, I more than roll my eyes. I mean, if I'm being perfectly honest, and this is again another example of
not all the time.
Not all of the time. But historically, I would notice, and this is why I was jokingly suggesting all the eye rollers out there, but in all seriousness, look at those moments when you do have an extreme reaction to someone else's self-expression or choice of behaviors or whatever it was, because I did see a pattern in myself. I would get irritable, agitated, annoyed, almost like, how dare you ask so directly to have your need met? And it really wasn't a reaction at them at all. The reality of my reaction was actually a little bit of frustration and annoyance at my own self, because it does not happen, to speak to your point, Jenna, all of the time, though. The moments where I do feel that annoyance seeing someone else be so assertive or direct in having their own needs met, whether it's solo by taking time or space away alone or asking in collaboration within relationship, that highlighted for me my lack of regulation, my lack of grounding, the fact that probably I hadn't been meeting my needs and I needed a little something, whether to ask for support from someone around me or to take time for myself. So I wanted to give and highlight some examples now of the shadow, because that's been really clear to me and it's still present. Like I said, not all of the time, as I learn to create space and show up in service of my own needs so I can then help and support other people. Those moments of agitation absolutely are fewer and far between. And when they do happen, I don't shame myself. I take the information that's there. And another similar shadow moment that, again, is more historically relevant than more recently has been the case for me. With the advent of social media, I mean, I think when TikTok, it might have been. What was the dancing app? I think it was TikTok. One of the apps when they first came out was known as the dancing app. Either way.
TikTok challenge.
Anyone who knows me historically knows that I do not go dancing. You're not going to see me in a club. You're never going to pull me off of the wall. If I am near music, I don't like to be seen moving my body in public. So when this new beautiful social media app came and I was in front of my face, people dancing, I would notice that same visceral reaction. I'd scroll away. I might say something negative or snarky about them in my mind's eye. And I just, my body revolted against that. And again, in reality, I've come to realize it's nothing about them at all. I mean, it is to the extent that what I was seeing, someone so free in their body, so embodied, so able to express, right, their feelings, their energy, their motion through movement, actually activated that deep part of me that was unable to do that. That's been so repressed and suppressed in my own self-expression, let alone through movement. I gave up dancing very early on in favor of the sport I was better at. And similarly, you know, not allowing myself, not only through movement, not allowing any space for my emotions, my perspective, my thoughts, all was flashed in my face when I saw someone so free in their self-expression. So instead of, right, knowing in the moment, oh, okay, this is information,
the immediate thing I would react to initially was, I just don't like that person or what they're doing, only to over time expand and give myself the space to understand what it was really about. It was about me, my own unexpressed needs and desires and expression. And it was actually an opportunity for me to continue to create space for me to bravely share myself with the world.
It's so interesting that for you, it's specifically that body and dancing. It's a movement. And if you have tuned into the last few podcasts or really any of them, you've heard us say in some ways, if you spot it, you got it. And my brother Jake said that to me recent before he died, and it just instantly clicked. And I use it in the moments that I'm most perturbed or irritated with someone. I know there's a resonance as to why that person is getting under my skin. And when I feel that, I hear Jake in my mind. I'm like, damn, I know that there is something there for me to uncover or for me to look at. And it's such a great depiction hearing your sharing about that resonance and that ping with people dancing on these TikTok challenges, because it's the same thing. There's a reason that your little pinger went off about that, because for you particularly, so much of your healing has been an embodied practice. So much of the thought and the mental, I mean, you have a PhD, you're a psychologist, you're very analytical. So much of your healing has been the embodiment and the body, which was the first thing that there was this little resistance pinger to that really perturbed you and bothered you. And I see through your example that the same, but a contrast of that, where I've always been so embodied and so in touch with my physical intuition. I followed like my gut and my heart, never had language for it, didn't understand what I was doing, but I followed this body. I didn't have that analytical piece, or the mental aspect of it was, that's where most of my work is uncovering, okay, I can feel all these things, but I have to give language to them. I have to somehow be able to understand and regurgitate them or speak them in a way that's digestible, not just to be outward and teach, but if I can't articulate in my mind thoughts and make digestible the experience that's happening in my body, then I'm kind of stuck. This is why we teach emotions and sensations, or are constantly saying, you know, drop into your body. And people always ask, what does that mean? Like, I'm in my body. I have a body. Yes, you have a body. And largely, we're thinking from our heads, completely disconnected to the fact that our heart is actually sending more messages to our brain than our brain sends to our heart. So our body is so much more in control than we've ever given credit. And when you can begin to explore these reactions or resistance or those little things that, you know, if you spot it, you got it. When you're willing to see that you got it and not make that wrong and uncover what's there, you can learn even more about your ego or about your shadow in the parts that may have been more difficult to access or seem less favorable. For example, I've spent my whole life, literally 30 plus years now, I'm 36, volunteering. I worked for AmeriCorps. I volunteered for AmeriCorps for 2 years, which is quite literally national service for the United States, except you're not deployed outward. You work for the communities inside of your country, developing, working in school programs, working in impoverished areas. And I did this for years right after high school, and I've continued consistently to keep a relationship there. And in a lot of ways of volunteering and giving my time, because I didn't have means, I didn't have money, but the one thing I could give was my time. And a few years ago, I really started to clue into the fact that I was being so egoic and so self-sacrificing in my giving, that yes, I genuinely wanted to give, and giving was comfortable for me. It actually is part of a familiar past. Even as a child, I received from others and I gave to others in community. Though I witnessed how it allowed me to completely betray my own needs, completely deny and push to the back burner all of the mental chaos, all of the wounding, all of the trauma, everything that I had physically sort of thought I moved throughout my body, I really had just packed so far away. And because I'm unlovable, because I'm not chosen, because I'm not worthy, because those are my ego stories from being abandoned and quite literally not chosen as a child, I always sought experiences where I did get to come in like the knight in shining armor and lead the service project or lead hundreds of volunteers through something or fly to Albuquerque on Christmas Day to lead a big event, because it doesn't matter if I honor this day or not. That was all self-sacrificing and a need for me to appear in some perfect way and also get validation that I was needed, that I was loved, and that I was worthy, because I was actually unwilling to sit with the discomfort that I so deeply believed I really wasn't worthy, and that that actually isn't the truth. But it took some time and really me hitting pause and saying, you know what, I'm done doing this. I'm not going on these trips anymore. I'm not running these events. I'm actually going to spend some time going inward so that I can stop sacrificing my own self just to perpetuate this ego story of mine.
I really love how expanded this conversation has become, all of the different ways, right, we're enacting or embodying our ego, just even beyond, again, as I referenced it, being a mental construct. I'm hoping this episode is really illustrating how beyond that it is. For some of us, we're so protected in our roles, the caretaker, the you know, perfectionist, or the overachiever, the self-sacrificer, or whatever it is, the helper, right? We're so identified with our role out of that protection that we're not even aware of everything behind the scenes that's contributing to it. Yes, of course, some people might tune into the patterns in our thoughts and those patterns in those narratives, and a whole other group of you might begin with the sensations, right? How does your body feel? Because the complicated nature of trauma is not only is it stored in part in the part of our brain, which doesn't necessarily is, or its function isn't necessarily verbal. It's in the right side of our brain. Of course, I'm simplifying it. Though often for many of us, the trauma, the overwhelming childhood environments happened at a time where we were pre-verbal. We didn't have the language, which is why trauma and all of the memories, you know, including our ego and all of these identities that we've created, sometimes we don't actually have the language to voice what it is. And some of us might, you know, have images or visceral sensations or, you know, other things that come to mind as we begin to explore the deeper embodiment of this ego and this shadow. So I'm really loving how expanded this conversation has become, because again, when I hear ego talked about oftentimes, right, it's in our mind, it's not real, we need to kill it. No, the reality of it is it's an embodied aspect in our life, and it's had a protective stance and role for a very long time. And so we need to not only become aware of it, we need to create new habits, new things to do, new ways to meet our needs, new ways to be regulated emotionally, new ways to connect with other people, because we can't just remove something we're relying on without anything in its place, which again is why this is a journey. And there's many different entry points. And I'm hoping that as we illustrated some of our own journeys with exploring our own ego and exploring our own shadow, I'm hoping some of, like you said, the doors are beginning to open, where maybe there was a little bit more of a limited way you were thinking about ego. And my hope is that it's now become a little more expansive and maybe a little more palpable and real, so that you too can begin to witness your ego or your shadow in your day-to-day exchanges or interactions or life.
And while you just gave two examples of, you know, you might be noticing the thoughts in your head, or you might be that person who is the more embodied and notices the feelings, or maybe both, or maybe none. If you are in that arena of being in touch with the physical sensations, notice where your body's pulled. I am just putting this in here at the end because I remember witnessing as if my head was almost detached from my body and I was floating and watching it. I would witness my body literally like pull itself around the house, or I would pull watch my body pull itself to go pitter-patter and find Nicole to see what Nicole was doing next. So that could then determine what I was doing. And that's a micro example of that pull that I've used to describe everywhere I've gone and moved in my life, but also that pull to go to all those places to volunteer or lead those projects. I was responding to a physical embodied pull that I can see now in what you're just saying at the end is so connected to like those pre-verbal moments where the body remembers. My favorite quote, said it 1,000 times, there is more wisdom in your body than in your deepest philosophy. That or in your greatest philosophy. I always interchange those words, but that quote is by Nietzsche. And the body does remember and recall. And this is why it's so important to tap into that wisdom. And so many people ask, how do we discern between, you know, the intuition in our gut and trauma in our gut? And this is a really great example where I am someone who's always been so embodied and in touch with my body, though my body also took on those ego narratives of finding and seeking, being called to places where I would get validated, or being called to places where I would betray my own needs and I would prove to myself that I wasn't worthy or that I wasn't lovable. Those weren't always directed by my thoughts. Those first came from pulls in my body. And until we become aware, we'll either be led and pulled by our egoic thoughts, or we will be led and pulled by the story and the narrative that is quite literally impacted into our bodies and ourselves. So witness your physical self too. Notice where your little body just kind of pings itself and pulls itself, or where your body is telling you it needs to go hop on that trip next, and start to maybe wonder why, or just immerse in curiosity. That immersion in curiosity is quite literally all of the work in itself consistently. It's being in the present moment in an intentionally curious space. It's those moments consistently compounded over time that make up the entirety of our healing journey and the entirety of our lives. So imagine sitting in reflection to a life that you chose to be in intentional curiosity, intentional inquiry, all of which only happens in the present moment. The more you show up in that space and allow yourself to be in a space of stillness with no answers coming, but you're willing to be there over and over and over, that turns into the moments of our lives that were spent in presence and then allow us to actually create intentional moments of our lives that are different from all of the learned behaviors, all the learned patterns, all the learned ego stories that have been conditioned and drilled in from our past.
So speaking of following those bodily pings and creating intentional moments, we are so grateful for each and every one of you who are participating in these weekly conversations. And if you haven't yet checked out our Instagram account and our YouTube, the Self Healer Soundboard, where we post these videos every Sunday.
And Twitter,
to engage with our incredible community. We love to hear, and so many community members share their own reactions, their own thoughts, their own practices after watching these episodes. And the community, of course, while Jenna and I are up here sharing our own individual journeys throughout these conversations, it really is the community that helps us all feel a little less alone. So if you haven't had an opportunity to check out any of those platforms or pages, I hope you do so. And as always, looking forward to continuing this conversation with you all on next episode.